Episode 1, Aperitif, written by Brian Fuller, directed by David Slade. We are introduced to Will Graham, a criminal profiling lecturer with an apparent empathy disorder who is able to use a combination of his immense empathy and the tactic of a mental pendulum in the form of a strobing light in his mind to take the evidence at a crime scene and recreate the scenario in his head. It gives him incredible insight into the actions and motives of a killer. Although he was deemed too unstable to join the FBI himself, he is recruited by FBI agent Jack Crawford as a special investigator to help solve a series of murders. 8 similar-looking girls who have all fallen victim to one shared killer. Through his deduction, Will determines that their killer is trying to express a form of sympathy and love for his victims because of an obsession with one girl in particular. Will also determines that in order to honour his victims, he is eating some of their organs. This killer is nicknamed the Minnesota Shrike by the press. Jack Crawford and Dr. Alana Bloom, one of Will's colleagues and acquaintances, are concerned that Will may be exposed to harm through his profiling at crime scenes, so he is introduced to psychiatrist Dr. Hannibal Lecter, a charismatic man who cannot stop himself from psychoanalyzing Will at every available opportunity. One more victim is presented, whose crime scene does not seem to match the MO of the serial killer, but rather the work of a mysterious, intelligent psychopath and apparent copycat. Through a combination of FBI work and some element of luck, Will and Hannibal find themselves visiting the home of Garrett Jacob Hobbs, who Will believes to be a possible suspect. Intentions unclear, Hannibal calls Hobbs to warn him of their arrival. Upon arriving at his home, they find that Hobbs has just murdered his wife Louise, and inside the house is about to murder his daughter Abigail. Will shoots Hobbs repeatedly, and witnesses him slump to the ground and mutter the words, "See? See?" before he dies. He rushes to try and save Abigail, who is bleeding out from a cut to the throat, before Hannibal intervenes and stems the bleeding. The episode ends with Will going to visit Abigail, comatose, in the hospital, only to find Hannibal asleep beside her, holding her hand. This is the podcast Fate and Circumstance, where we're gonna talk about that. Me, someone who has a hyperfixation with the show, and two of my friends who have never seen the show before now. My name is Felix Fanfaron Fern. I'm an intersectional activist and a writer, and I'm horribly obsessed with Hannibal, and these are two of my friends. Would you like to introduce yourselves?
Hello, I'm Melissa Susan. I'm a content creator, and I like doing random shit, so I agree to this. Watch the show, and now I'm pretty obsessed.
Hi, I'm Shia Bambi. I'm an intersexual activist too. I do a little bit of different shenanigans here and there. And I love data and overall a professional nerd, I think.
I just want to know, from watching the show for the first time, what did you think about it?
Cool, weird, what the fuck? Those are the first things that kind of come to my peripheral when I think about it overall. I think I was watching it and I was like, this is very like 2010 style. And then my girlfriend just goes, yeah, this came out years ago. I looked up and I was like, oh, that makes so much sense. But I loved that. I loved it.
I think I came up with kind of like two sides to everything, because just everything felt like two sides of everything in terms of two sides of Hannibal, two sides of Will Graham. But yeah, two sides of everything. I think I'll discuss this a bit later, but it's one of the reasons that I said that is because of a certain scene with Hannibal and Jack Crawford.
I do think the two sides thing is very perceptive.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very perceptive thing to say, and I think you'll definitely be rewarded in following episodes. I think that's a very good way to see the show. Hell yeah, good stuff.
Oh, wow, okay, I'm better at sussing these things out than I thought I was.
I think that's a very good description, because what I would... Something I commonly say about this show when I think about it, when I talk about it, is the concept that Will and Hannibal, being the primary protagonists, are two sides of the same coin. So I think there's two sort of concurrent themes of them being both the same and different, and each of them having two sides to them as well, which I think we see definitely hints of that with Hannibal in the first episode.
Oh, fantastic. No, I didn't. My reading wasn't far off.
No, absolutely spot on. So my first talking point was such a generic one because I just wanted to know what your first impressions of Will Graham are. Everyone knows that Will is my favourite character, so I want to know what you think of him. It's being the main character, we are exposed to a lot of information about Will, and yet not very much at the same time. So, yeah, what did you think of Will, the weird guy with detective superpowers?
Smash.
I also like this guy, this motherfucker has superpowers, what the hell?
Yeah, I feel like it was a very interesting way of portraying like how he figures out like a crime scene and how he deduces what happens. I thought, again, very like 2010 style, but also like timeless at the same time. I feel like now watching it still, I'm just like, whoa, that was like really impressive. I don't know. I was very impressed by it. I quite liked that whole thing. It was very eerie, very scary, a little bit sexy, and I was like, I am scared and turned on at the same time. I'm thoroughly enjoying myself.
I think that's a very good description of the entire show.
Thank you very much.
I agree with you, Melissa. Absolutely sexy and scared at the same time. I think,
yeah.
I think I replied, "Hallelujah, brother." Which is like,
No, that does sum up Hannibal. I think.
If that like sums up the show, I am ready for this roller coaster.
Yeah, same here.
It only gets sexier and scarier.
Oh, yes.
I wanted to start with I think it's a very good line that a lot of people have different thoughts about. So obviously we start with the crime scene that Will is reenacting, and then it goes and reveals, oh, it's his classroom and he's teaching people about it because he's a lecturer. And one of the things he says to his class is, everyone has thought about killing someone one way or another, be it your own hands or the hand of God. Do you agree?
Yes. I think I said this earlier, where I said I imagined killing several people today already. So like, I think I definitely agree.
I think it's really interesting you both said yes.
Yeah, and the way that you said that, Sharon, in the sense of like, oh, I imagined like killing a few people today, it's such a like casual throw around thing in like a jokey way, just I think that further emphasizes the fact that we all do it, and I don't think it's like a weird thing. Like I think it's almost a very natural thing, just because it's something that's so big, something we know is not right. And you know, if you have serious thoughts about it, it's a whole nother thing. You know, I think it's not weird to have those kind of thoughts. Like people think about death often or not. Like I just think that's a very natural thing to do, and I don't think that it's a bad thing per se, and I don't think it's as uncommon as maybe someone might initially think.
Oh, absolutely. But I think also people are going to disagree and be like, oh, this is weird of you to do. Mm-hmm. Even though it's like, no, I think a lot of people do it.
And it's also like, if someone is the complete opposite and is like, no, what the hell, that is weird. It is very weird. And like, it's almost like both opinions, like, I mean, obviously any opinion is valid, but it's like both sides are so like understandable. Like, why the hell would you think about that? That's very strange. Yes, it is. Everyone thinks about it. It is kind of normal. But just because it's something that's so wrong and something that you shouldn't do, I feel like just makes the brain think about it more. So obviously, I think it is normal.
That's incredibly interesting to me.
All right.
Because I don't. I completely agree with both of you. I think it is an incredibly natural thought, and I think it is something that the vast majority of people experience, which is why it's extra interesting hearing you both say that, because I'm like, it's not something I really tend to think about. But that might, I don't know if that's also maybe to do with the fact that I am an incredibly morbid person, and I consume a lot of very morbid and violent media.
Mm.
So interestingly, I don't tend to have thoughts like that.
I mean, it's almost daily when I worked in hospitality, I can't lie. 2 hours in there, sort of.
I imagine anyone who has worked retail service probably thinks about killing people.
Yeah.
And I think that's very natural.
I don't think I got it through retail when working in retail services. I think I generally think about like killing people in a way of like, if this person was dead, it would probably make the world a little bit better. In that term of
I think that's very understandable as well, especially in this day and age where not only the world is in a difficult place, but the information about that is more accessible than it's ever been. Yeah. So I think if we're going to think negative thoughts about people, now is the easiest time to be brought to that thought.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Acting upon it is completely different. Yes. I definitely implore people not to act upon those thoughts, please. We are just talking about it.
Yeah, to be clear, neither Shira nor Melissa are homicidal, and neither is anyone listening to this who also thinks about killing people. That could be wrong. You might be homicidal. I'm not judging you in particular if you are, but seek help. What are the odds someone out there is probably thinking about murder? That's fine. You know, I do think, like anything, it's a completely natural thing, just the same way that we think about death in regards to ourselves. Yeah. Some people think about it more than others. Some people think about it all the time. But everyone gets a fleeting thought. I don't think there's anyone who's never had a fleeting thought about killing someone. Just it's just manifests differently for other people. For me, it's mostly just like, oh, I don't get out of my brain. Thank you very much. Goodbye. But I'm a big soft lamb. So. This is something that's going to inevitably get discussed, and I think it makes sense to discuss it most for the first episode, because it comes up contextually the most in the first episode, which is Will Graham autistic?
Yes.
I think the natural answer is to say yes, but technically, annoyingly, no. It comes up when Jack corrects Will's glasses, and I kind of hate the fact that it's so sexy, because there's nothing sexy going on between Will and Jack. But I don't know what it is about correcting someone's glasses that's so inappropriately close and touchy-feely that it's kind of sexy. However, in the script, it confirms that Will had his glasses lower down for a reason, and he does it quite a bit. He wears them low to avoid eye contact, so the top of his glasses like obscures his pupils, and then he can't see people as well. So the script makes him sound even more autistic. Will specifically says, "My horse is hitched to a post closer to Asperger's and autistics than narcissists and sociopaths." And then Jack is like, "But you understand narcissists and sociopaths." So it's almost a confession that's not quite a confession. It's a, yes, I'm on the spectrum close to that side, but we're not gonna canonize it. And the creators and Hugh Dancy many times has insisted that Will is not autistic. So, given not just that moment in the show, but throughout the whole episode, Will's autistic traits, what do you think about them?
I relate so hard. How is he not so autistic? Really, so much relate. There's so much about him that just goes, oh, I do that, oh, I do that, oh, I do that. It's like, but then sometimes I also question my own autism. So that's understandable, but honestly, like, I get why they don't want to confirm he's autistic, because it could come off as a bad representation of autism. But, you know, not every autistic person's the same. So the more people with autism in media, then like the better the representation all around will be. But yeah.
For sure. Like, I'm neurotypical. That's what we're called. Yeah. So
that's
for
the
me,
one.
Yep. So normie. For me, yeah, the normie brain, unfortunately. No. So me watching it, but also having a lot of, I guess, secondhand experience through my brother and through other people, and being like growing up around people with neurodivergency through my brother and other things, I would say, like, I definitely understand your point, Shira, where I guess maybe to cover their backs just so that they don't come off as not trying to be insensitive in any way that isn't intentional. That's probably why they say that he isn't. But I think it's always nice if anyone can relate to anything through anything that they watch and enjoy. So I guess in that sense, it's quite nice if someone like yourselves or anyone else is watching it, they're enjoying it, and they're like, oh, I relate to that. And if that's someone else's interpretation of it, why not let people interpret things how they want to? I feel like anything, like a book to a film to a TV show to any kind of art or any kind of content, but like any way that you consume it, it's down to your interpretation, even if you have like a blueprint set out right in front of you. everything is still people's interpretation. And I think if people want to relate to it in that way and relate to the certain autistic traits, I think that's bloody lovely.
I agree. I think, unsurprisingly, there are a lot of people who kind of insist, well, my headcanon is that Will is autistic, even though we've been told he's not autistic. And I think that is incredibly understandable given his traits. I think it'll be a fun point to revisit as we get further into the show. Because, I mean, throughout the first season, definitely, you see more of his sort of neurodiverse traits, or what I would read, again, as another autistic person, as neurodivergent. And it's also, I think, very good that we have a spectrum of neurodiversity in this podcast, because I think that makes it far more interesting than just all being one way or the other. Because he has other little twitchy habits, and it's not surprising to me at all that autistic people see it and embrace it and don't feel offended by it, knowing that they've said he's not, and more just like, well, I don't care because that reflects me and I like this character, so that feels good and comforting to me, not bad. And that's how I feel when I watch Will Graham. It's kind of like, so one of the things is the idea that he chooses to avoid eye contact, and of course there's the wonderful scene where he explains his relationship with eye contact with Hannibal. And the idea is that I think some people are kind of like, well, it's weird that it's kind of revealed that he chooses to avoid eye contact instead of it being innate. And I'm kind of like, I get that, but actually as an autistic person, I choose not to look at people in the eye. It's not innate. It's not that I physically can't look people in the eye. I can, but I choose not to because it makes me uncomfortable and makes me perceive them in a different way. So I'm actually fine with that interpretation. I think it's fine for some traits to be choice and not inevitable.
I'm also very, very on board with that as well, because I don't, so that I can't do eye contact. It's not like at times it is just a voluntary, oh, I'm looking away from your eyes, but most of the time I'm choosing to not look into your eyes or make eye contact with you. Especially nowadays where we're with masking as well, like, when I'm like actively masking, I'm actively choosing to look into your eyes, you know, trying to get you to relate to me as a neurotypical person. But yeah, if I could choose, I'd choose never to look into anyone's eyes ever. And hopefully that be seen as something normal and not awkward and not unprofessional.
Yes, please normalize eye contact not being considered a basic human trait that everyone has to do, especially in things like fucking job interviews.
Yes,
where
please.
You can be marked down in certain companies for not making eye contact with the person interviewing you. It's ableist and it's ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely. Barely made eye contact in the interview I had today. I mean, to be fair, two of them were on a Teams call and there was only one person in there, but just out of natural nerves within being in the interview at the first bit, I was just sort of like looking around, and I think it's so normal, and you just sort of, as you're thinking, your process about things that you're thinking about and things that you want to say, you kind of, it's natural to look around. And also sometimes I just can't be fucked to look at people, and I just can't be asked, and I can't be bothered to make eye contact. I feel like eye contact, for me personally, is so draining, so I can't even imagine how it is for you guys. Like, keeping eye contact with someone that I don't want to keep eye contact with, for me, like I said, it's just so draining, and I just can't be asked. And I'm like, I'm just going to chat, I'm looking around, I'm going to look at you for 2 seconds, and I'm going to talk and look around at other things. So again, yeah, I can't imagine what it is for you guys when you literally make yourselves
It's so draining, and I generally, we'll probably talk about this a bit more later on, but it's so draining, and I just really don't find it like conducive to talking to people. It's like, I can better formulate my my points if you allow my eyes to wander.
Should not be considered a mark of success or competency. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. People can express themselves without eye contact or without typical like body movements, like the way someone holds their body or the way that they move their limbs, also often is considered like a weird sign, and it shouldn't be, because if you can communicate, you can communicate, and again, there are different ways to communicate, and they're all fine.
Absolutely. And I think we'll actually agree with us on these points.
Well, yeah, to be honest, I'll be very surprised if we have any big disagreements, but if they are, I'll egg on a fight, because it'll be entertaining.
Well, okay.
Oh yeah,
I'd like to see that.
I'll start chanting fight, it'll be great.
Yeah, as long as we're both oiled up, we will.
Great.
Sorry.
Drama.
I'll get a ring girl sign and just walk around the lounge. Just be like, round one.
Me and Shara, we fight. It'll be beautiful. My next talking point, which is very important to me personally, is what are your first impressions of Dr. Hannibal Lecter?
Sort of weird, but also, you're being cute with Will. Why are you being cute with Will? You're fucking weird. But then also, like, daddy? And then also, just like, why do I feel like this? I'm confused within myself. I didn't know I was going to go on this journey of self-discovery.
I had similar, except granddaddy one, because... Lion Fishbunny's granddaddy too, but yeah, horny parts outside. If looks could kill, I was like, yeah, absolutely. Mm. And I'm not saying like looks as in the way he's dressed, but like his, although damn, the way he makes eye contact with everyone in the show, just kind of like, just gives very like. I could probably kill you with this pencil kind of vibe. That could be just because it's Mads Mikkelsen, but at the same time, I think it's really good way of portraying Hannibal or Dr. Lecter's character.
Oh, yeah. Very good casting, like, for sure. Like, to a T.
So... I can give you some interesting trivia, kind of.
Oh, yes, please.
I didn't actually write this one down because you mentioned it. When they were creating the show, Hugh Dancy, who plays Will Graham, was one of the first people cast because Brian Fuller wanted him. And Hugh Dancy had been in a film with Mads Mikkelsen and suggested him. I'm pretty sure that Hugh Dancy denies this, but Brian Fuller insists it was Hugh Dancy's idea. However... NBC, who broadcasted the show, were kind of like, this is some weird Dane that no one knows who that is. No, this is Hannibal Lecter. This is Silence of the Lambs. This is a big thing. We need a big name. So they said no. And they tried repeatedly to sell big name actors. I wish I could remember some because all of them were fucking ridiculous. But they kept trying to get really big name actors and they would say no. So they would try again and they would say no. And Brian Fuller would say, what about Mads Mikkelsen? And they would say no. And so it took ages for them to agree to it. And I know Hugh Dancy and Brian Fuller were so fucking happy when it finally got down to them giving up and relenting to this casting because they knew he would be perfect. Mads and Hugh work incredibly well together. They have a lot of one-on-one scenes, so that's really important for the show. But it could have easily not been him, which in retrospect seems really weird.
Yeah.
Because he's perfect. but they really didn't want him.
Yeah. They knew what they wanted, and that's good that they really stuck to their guns because now look at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would be super weird without Mads.
Right?
Because, like, who else would they want to have brought on? Weirdly, I thought it would be someone like Ghost Rider actor.
Oh, Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
Oh, that was so funny.
Straight away, I thought Nicolas Cage. Like, oh yeah, we got a Nicolas Cage as well.
I kind of want someone to edit him in now. I wish I could remember some, but they were all like really stupidly big Hollywood actors, and none of them would have been right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's what NBC wanted because of the books and the films that had already come before it, because obviously Anthony Hopkins and Silence of the Lambs is a big thing. People know that Hannibal Lecter. On that note, what is either of yours exposure to Hannibal Lecter prior to this? Have you seen any of the films, like, or read the books or anything related to it before this?
I feel like I've seen a few clips here and there just through other content. I watch a lot of YouTube, and a lot of the things I will watch is just sort of like reaction things, so a lot of people reacting to seeing certain stuff. So I've seen like a few clips and stuff of the guy with the forbidden thing on his mouth, and that's all I know. I don't know if it's really much of a reference or anything at all, but anyone watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine, that guy that would always be like that one dude that would always chat to them, be like, oh yeah, like I'm cool now, blah blah blah, and they just sat there, and then randomly at the end he's just like, ah, like to go and like open his mouth, and he's like, like, yeah, no, I'm still eating people. That I always enjoyed, and I always thought, like, that's got to be inspired by, like, Hannibal Lecter, because I feel like anything on from that is just always a bit of a nod to him. Like, he's the OG, I feel like. The OG of cannibals.
He is the OG Hannibal.
He is the OG Hannibal. Yeah, no, there's lots of media that's inspired by Hannibal Lecter. I've watched the movie with Anthony Hopkins. Yeah, I really enjoyed the movie. I can't say I enjoyed the movie more than I enjoyed the first episode. Weirdly, I enjoyed the first episode of this TV show than I watched to enjoy the movie. I think I didn't get the movie at the time. Maybe I need to go back and watch it. But then, yeah, obviously, like Melissa, I've also consumed media, different types of media that have it. Lots of different clips. Like, I think a bunch of clips of Mads Mikkelsen have come up on my YouTube shorts because... Yeah, as you could probably know, I'm a little bit horny for him, a little bit smitten, a little bit of a simp. Yeah, but yeah, that's how I consumed Hannibal content in the past. I've not actually watched this TV show before, which is the whole premise of the show. You're the one who's obsessed and knows so much, and we're the ones who get to experience this for the first time. Like, oh my god, such a fun experience. Like, the first episode, I've watched it 3 times already. Once yesterday, twice today. Just like, and I'm itching to watch the second episode, which I won't until obviously then we start to record, until we get the date on the next recording for the second podcast, second episode. But it's going to be very hard. I might actually go back and watch episode one. I might even go back and watch the movie.
Yeah, I think I would like to watch the movie at some point. Like, this is technically my first proper actual face-to-face of anything, really. Like we've already said, I've seen, like, fleeting things here and there. I know the iconic dude with his mask thing. Is it, what is it? Is it, like, is it literally, like, a thing that you put on, like, pets to not make them eat stuff?
Yeah, it's a muscle so hilarious. He doesn't bite someone.
Yeah. Oh, my God, that's hilarious. Down boy.
I can't wait till you see the versions of it in the show.
Oh my god. Are we going to be turned on again? Yeah, probably.
If you're me, yes.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's me. Someone can just look good or look at me and be like, okay, cool.
Look, I'm expecting to be turned on every single episode. I feel bad about that because there's a lot of blood, there's a lot of gore, there's a lot of people dying.
Why would that make you feel bad?
Like, because like,
well, bad or bad.
Like, I'm expecting turned on. People are going to be like, but what are you going to be turned on about? And I have to say, I'm going to just put this out there. It's not the blood. It's not the gore. It's definitely Mads Mikkelsen, and like, obviously, it's Lawrence Fishburne.
Some of us, it's the blood and the gore.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, so I'm on kind of a similar level to both of you in that I haven't consumed a lot of other Red Dragon or Hannibal Lecter-related media. I did watch Silence of the Lambs many years ago. I need to watch it again because there are issues with it, especially in terms of transphobia. That's a kind of a contentious thing. There's good and bad about it. One... just a very bad character who is often interpreted as trans. Two, they do explicitly say in the film that he is not trans, but people love to ignore that bit. But also, I have watched the movie Red Dragon, but that was a very long time ago. There are actually a lot of films. There's Hannibal Rising, Manhunter, there's a bunch of others. There's loads of films based on the Red Dragon book series. Hannibal, the TV show, is based on the first book. I should mention this, I probably should, that Will Graham is a very small character in Red Dragon. He's not in it for that long, and Brian Fuller, I guess, just decided, this guy's really interesting, let's make an entire TV show about him. Some of his kind of rapport with Hannibal is accurate to the books, some of it isn't. Some of the characters in the show are different genders as well. Dr. Alana Bloom, who is in the show, is a man in the books, and there's another character, Freddie Lowndes, who is also a man in the books. And when someone asked Brian Fuller why they changed the gender of the characters, he literally just said, because the show needs more women. Nice. And he's not wrong.
I like that, more women.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was literally just like, there needs to be more women in the show, so we're just going to make them women. There's no reason why these characters have to be men, and they don't. And it's perfect. They in general, the sort of creation of the show is quite, I think maybe not feminist is the correct word, but it's somewhere in a weird middle ground between feminist and progressive.
Sure.
I think progressive is maybe a better term for the creation of the show because it comes from a queer person, essentially. Brian Fuller is very openly queer, and I think that explains a lot of the show. And by that, I don't mean queer representation in the show. I mean the show itself, the way that it doesn't like to portray excessive violence towards women, the way that they chose not to show any sexual violence. It's silly, and it shouldn't be the case, but you can feel that it comes from a queer person and not a cishet person, in my opinion.
Yeah, we discussed this earlier, and yeah, I was really appreciative that they toned down the sexual violence towards women. The violence towards women, obviously, it needs to be, well, not needs to be shown, it's obviously it's a bit difficult to not show it in a show about crime and cannibals and things like that, but the fact that they specifically try to steer away from that to make it easier for feminine and feminine-leaning people to watch is very valuable to someone who has trauma-related stuff. But yeah, that was one of the things that kind of went, yeah, I'm absolutely going to be enjoying this show.
What I'm thinking about as we're talking about this is that it obviously aired, was it 2013
that it aired? That sounds about right, yeah.
Yeah,
maybe,
so
I think 2013 is right.
Yeah, so about that time. So obviously this would have been in a lot of production and pre-production like a few years before then. Mm-hmm. The fact that, like, it's crazy that we even say this, but the fact that it happened potentially 2010, 2011, that all of these ideas were coming into fruition and this is what they decided is, like, even more impressive in the sense that, everything else around them probably wasn't as forward in a way, in that kind of sense. Like, I don't think in that time, in that specific era, that any other people that weren't maybe queer or maybe thinking about these things, you know, like, wouldn't even consider that maybe. I think they would maybe just go down whatever route they would go down and just, if it happens, it happens. Whereas it's quite nice that they, you know, had that time to think about it and they were like, you know, we're not going to depict any of this, it's not needed, we're going to have more women. And hey, I'm never going to say no to more women. Just side note. So it's, like I said, it's even crazy because it's not even that long ago at all. But like the fact that it was what they were doing back then, I feel like probably was even more of a ordeal because I don't think anyone else was really doing things the way that they were.
I agree. It's been interesting because I know a while back, I don't know how many years ago, but it would have been quite a few now, Brian Fuller spoke openly about the use of sexual assault as a plot device. And he specifically criticised the show Law and Order, which is a procedural, so there's not a whole lot of consistent character stories. It's mostly just, here's the crime, here's the courtroom, different case every episode. And he complained about the fact that it often uses sexual assault as just a random thing that happened and would show it. And there was no reason for it. It was just pointless and empty, and he criticised that. And interestingly, Law and Order, after a big hiatus, started a new series in 2021, the new Law & Order SVU, which stars Hugh Dancy as prosecutor Nolan Price. And I have watched both of the first two seasons and the current airing third season, and there has been no sexual assault.
Fantastic. So that's,
progression.
Yeah, it makes a difference to speak out about stuff if you have a platform to say, actually, that's not okay, don't fucking do that. And it can make a difference, which is really nice.
Who would have thought, hey?
Honestly.
Wild, absolutely fucking wild concept.
Honestly, I think that's brilliant. Oh, God. And now it makes me want to watch it even more, like, because...
Yeah!
Like, I kind of want to watch everything with Hugh Dancy in it now, because that first episode really...
Welcome to my life. I can tell you everything that Hugh Dancy has been in.
Let me take notes.
I know him from... I forgot what it's called now. The one with...
Confessions of a Shopaholic? Ella Enchanted?
Yes.
Hysteria?
Confessions.
Shooting Dogs?
Confessions of a Shopaholic.
Oh,
okay, we've set off Felix.
I have a problem, and that problem's name is Hugh Dancy.
That's a good problem to have.
He's so beautiful. Would you like, before I lose myself, some more fun trivia?
Yes,
please.
So a fun thing about Hannibal, definitely in the first series, I don't know if it carries on to the other two series. I think it does, but I will have to check as I rewatch for the millionth time. Every single episode attempts to incorporate the color red, and I don't just mean blood, because that's kind of a given.
Yeah.
But yeah, every single episode is the color red.
Ooh.
There are two big examples of this in the first episode. One is the Quantico bathroom, where Will is washing his hands and Jack barges in and shouts at the extra use the ladies' room.
Yeah, I love that.
That was a fun scene.
And another extra piece of trivia is that extra did not know that Lawrence Fishburne was going to do that. And David Slade, who directed this episode and does a lot of the art direction for the show, has joked that he may have leaked a little bit on his way out of the bathroom after that. Yeah, he scared the shit out of that poor guy. So funny. That whole scene is very good and has very weird dialogue, such as Will saying he likes the smell of urinal cakes.
Yeah,
that bathroom is not only incredibly red, it's also very similar to the communal bathroom in the hotel in The Shining. Which is one of Brian Fuller's favourite movies. The other big red is Hannibal's office. It depends on the angle when you'll see it. In some shots of Hannibal's psychiatry office, you don't see the red because some of the walls, I think, are like a grey colour. The curtains are, this is all off the top of my head, by the way, there's something wrong with me. The curtains are like floor to ceiling striped white and red, or like a cool grey blue tone and red. And then one of the feature walls, I don't think it's both. I don't think it's the wall. I know his office. There's a wall with the door. Don't think that one's red. Then there's the two left and right walls, and then there's a far wall, and it's bright red. So in certain shots, there's just red in the back, and then others there aren't. You may also notice that Will wears a lot of cool-toned colours, blues and greys and greens. He wears a lot of flannel, dark jeans and chinos and trousers and colours. So Will, to me, this isn't a bit of fun trivia. This is just me and doing media analysis. To me, Will comes across very much as like the cool opposite of all of the violence that's happening, which I find interesting.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
I love noticing shit.
That's why it almost doesn't seem like him when he's like envisioning like what would have happened at the crime scene, and he like puts himself into the perpetrator's shoes. It's almost like a completely different person, and it's really cool because it obviously is a completely different person. It's not him, but it's like the glossed over look in his eyes as he's doing it is so far removed from his character. So that's a really interesting analysis of it, in the sense of like he is just the cool opposite of everything.
It really is. And also kind of like the later scenes where he's terrified of what he's witnessed in terms. It's like, yeah, he can so easily put himself into that position and so easily kind of turn off and become the villain. It almost feels like he is like the villain, like he is the murderer, he is the killer. And then later on, where you get like scenes where he's terrified of what he saw. It personalizes it. I forgot the word for it, but it gives you some empathy towards him, that he's not that kind of person. He's clearly someone who's very traumatized by it and very like, oh my god, I don't want to see myself become these people. I want to be this empathetic, cool person, this who's just there to like do his job and then come out of it unscathed, but he doesn't, which unfortunately manifests in the episode as nightmares or like visions that he sees, or his superpowers. That I kind of like my first thought when I first watched the first scene was like, this guy has superpowers, like I said.
Yeah,
that's the thing. It's like Brian Fuller always says, when you go into this show, it's with a suspension of belief. You have to be in the frame of mind of like, yeah, this is cool, but don't worry too much about how they do it, because ultimately it doesn't matter. What matters is the storytelling. Mm-hmm. It's okay that some things are unrealistic, because they always will be in a kind of horror show. It is interesting, and I think a lot of people I've seen, like, reviews of when they watched the first sort of one or two episodes, is that kind of innate idea of, oh, Will's actually quite scary. And it is interesting to think about things like his nightmares. It's just like, no, he's not scary. He's seen something and experienced something firsthand that's terrifying that isn't him. And that's scary.
And exactly, yeah, that is exactly what my reading was, where, like, he's put himself in that position where he's supposed to play the scary killer, because he's trying to figure something out, but no, he's not. He's, like, highly empathetic. He's living through literally trauma that he has to live through because of his straight day job.
One thing I didn't actually note this down, but just so I was talking about it, it made me realise, when you brought up his nightmares, is I mentioned that Will wears a lot of cool-toned colours compared to the red and the violence. He also... You'll see this more as the show goes on, but we see it a bit during his first nightmare, with all of the sweat and having to put towels down. And also there's the shower scene where he has a nightmare as well, is Will kind of has a weird intrinsic thing with water as well, which we'll see more of. But yeah, I like the interesting idea that Will is always cool-toned and always associated with water and nightmares. Bless him.
That's really cool. But also, poor him.
Yeah, poor. This entire show, all three seasons, is poor Will.
It's okay. I'll make him feel better. Come here, babe.
No, I like him broken. That's part of the appeal.
Oof. Oof, say it louder, go on.
I have two other pieces of trivia that are stupid. One
never
is...
Stupid.
Oh, 100% stupid. There's a line that Maz says in Jack Crawford's office, which is, "Perception's a tool that's pointed on both ends," which is a really good line. Maz Mikkelsen did not understand it at all. It doesn't translate well into Danish, and he had trouble saying it, and Hugh Dancy had to keep trying to explain it to him what the fuck it means so he could actually get it right, which I love. There's a lot of that throughout Hannibal.
Aww.
Everyone, please have just a lot of love for Maz Mikkelsen, who is dealing with a language that is not his own, and the most ridiculously purple poetic script that makes sense to no one, let alone people who don't naturally speak English.
Yeah.
He has to speak so many complicated lines, it's ridiculous.
Especially with things like phrases or sayings or something of the like. And if you speak any other languages, I think you'll know, or if you even try to translate something over at any point in life, you'll know that, like, a lot of sayings and things like that don't always translate over to another language. Like, even with English over to another language, or from another language into English, when you look at it through another language and you look at it in that language's sort of like grammar and what you understand about those words and nouns and everything, you sort of like, that makes no sense. Like, I said one time to my family in Cyprus, I was saying to my aunt about, like, not a bad bone in your body. And my aunt, she knows, like, a good amount of English, but she didn't really, like, understand what they meant. So then my grandmother, who is, like, fluent in English, she had to explain it to my aunt in a way that, like, she would understand. But she was saying it in Turkish, and when she said it in Turkish, she was like, I mean, we were both sort of like, yeah, that doesn't make sense in Turkish, like, at all. So bless him, like, he probably had, in this context specifically as well, like, this must have been so fucking confusing.
Yeah.
Oh, bless him.
Yeah.
Oh, good fucking actor having to deal with that. on top of everything else.
Yeah.
Such a good actor. That takes a lot of skill.
The only other piece of trivia that I have written down is, I didn't rewatch today to double check, but I've seen this episode so many times, I'm pretty sure that it's correct. But in episode one, we see Will Graham in his boxers and t-shirt two times.
Oh.
Will slutty little boxers.
Not Googling.
Oh, if I'm you Google, Googling. Like, Will slutty little boxers, you'll find pictures.
Slutty little.
There are a lot of episodes of Will in his boxers and white t-shirt. They're always the same ones.
Oh, I'm not zooming in.
Hey, there's films where he wears a lot less that you can watch.
Those nice legs.
Oh, he's got beautiful legs.
I'm still in the room.
He has absolutely beautiful legs.
I like women. What is going on?
Look, it's okay to like different people. It's sexuality is very fluid and complicated.
Yeah, that's true. I've realised I literally just like, I don't know, a good face. That's it. Like, you're a nice person. Get in my bed. Come on.
I had two more talking points listed down, things I really wanted to talk about, which is, it's perfect. So we were talking about nightmares. Swiggity swag, it's the nightmare stag. Will was we see him we see it for the first time. So at first he stop sending gifts of Will in his boxes.
Sorry. I am in the room.
I'm just trying to be what you know I'm weak to. Look at that man.
Look at the legs. Look at the legs. Look at the legs.
I'm looking too much at his face. Let's
send a formal.
Yeah, the face is what I'm looking at.
Just his face. Nightmare stuff. Oh, I'm clapping. So, Will obviously has some visions and nightmares. RT sees the corpse of the first victim, which is, I want to say it's Elise Nichols. It is Elise Nichols in Duluth, Minnesota. Because I know this shit. I definitely know it, and I definitely didn't have to check my notes. But then he sees the other victim, which is Cassie Boyle, which is the corpse displayed very obviously out in a field on some antlers, which Will later describes as being practically gift-wrapped from a very different kind of killer. It's after he sees that that he has a nightmare of what some people call the nightmare stag, some people call it the raven stag, some people just call it the stag. It's a stag that's covered in feathers. The idea being this is not what I picked up on my first watch, that it's covered in feathers, but it's got like raven's feathers all over it.
I did not pick up in my first watch or second watch.
I tend to use nightmare stags. That's probably what I will use going forward. He sees that after seeing that crime scene. Now, that crime scene are crows picking at the corpse that's mounted on antlers. So I guess the idea is it's a combination of those things. I don't know if you'll have any assembled thoughts on this, but any thoughts on the nightmare stag or what it may represent? Is it maybe that death or something else?
I feel a decoy by someone that did it on purpose to make it not look the same. I don't know what I mean by that. But I feel like someone's done it on purpose.
Do you think this the next talking point was copycat murder, so we'll tie them together because they both appear at the same time. So do you think that the corpse of Cassie Boyle, the copycat corpse, so you think it was done on purpose knowing that it looks like a copycat?
Yeah, whether it was done by the same bloke, don't know. But I feel like at least someone is trying to do that on purpose. I don't know. Yeah. I feel like they were trying to make it look fake or weird to throw Will off, because he was like, no, this isn't the same. They're not doing it the right way. And they riled poor babe up. I'm fuming. And I feel like someone's done that on purpose to make him think that. But then I feel like, wouldn't my man, being so smart and everything, know that that's what the intention was? I don't know. Maybe he was just really upset about it because it's not maybe it's not in the same, like the same thing. So it's not the same routine of what he's used to this person doing in the same way. So maybe he's just like, his initial reaction is like, no, this isn't right. This isn't the way that they usually do it. This is a copycat. Fuck this. I'm pissed off about it. But I feel like someone was intentionally doing that. Not, it was just some random person copycatting. If that makes sense.
Do you think then, and then I'll share what you think about this as well. Yeah. So you think it was done essentially to provoke, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in that case, do you think it was to provoke the FBI, whoever came across it, or Will specifically?
Oh, I don't know. I feel like maybe Will specifically, because it always goes this way. He's a smart baby boy. He knows what he's doing, and I think it's the very stereotypical thing. He's getting very close. He knows what he's doing. He's getting, probably they thought he was going to go even further and find out these people. So then they did this to throw him off his tracks, whichever way that they were intending to throw him off his tracks. I feel like it was a double, triple, quadruple bluff type situation. Yeah. And I stand on it.
What do you think, Shira?
Wait a minute. So I came to a conclusion earlier. Now my conclusion is kind of breaking apart. But like, I'll just explain my conclusion first. So I thought, because didn't they previously, before this part of the scene, didn't they have a talk that the murder got leaked? And, well, at least the previous murder got leaked and people were talking about it on
a website? A website called tattlecrime.com. So, so people would have been aware of the murders,
The murders. Okay, so the, my thought was just like, it's a copycat who just likes this the serial killer's MO and kind of just wanted to like, oh, I want to be this serial killer and kind of like get love from that serial killer. But now that I'm thinking about it, we saw the scene happen. We saw the scene coincide with Hannibal eating lungs because they talked about the missing lungs. Could it be that Melissa's onto something where it was supposed to be a reaction and it was Hannibal who did it?
That's what I was also thinking too, you know.
Now my brain is like, oh, God, what if I was completely going about wrong way about this? And it was something for Will, and it was done by either Hannibal or someone, a copycat, and it's trying to get the, Will rattled. Now my brain is like, oh, God, there's so many theories.
So, okay, so if we go with the idea that it's someone specifically targeting Will, knowing his capabilities... and his reaction to things, and therefore he would be able to know that it wasn't Garrett Jacob Hobbs and that it was a different killer.
Yeah.
So I see why you're tying it to Hannibal, because not that many people will know what Will is doing and why.
Yeah.
Why would Hannibal do that?
Oh yeah, that's the problem. That's the issue. Why would Hannibal do that? Like,
because he wants to fuck him.
Yeah, that could be a case, but...
It's always leading to a shag, and he just doesn't know how to pull the man, so he's like, I'm just going to mess with him, see what happens. Hee-hee.
Why ask someone out when you can just present a corpse?
Yeah. The biggest form of romantic gesture.
I mean, the scene before then, I think, was Will rejecting Hannibal. So maybe, in a way, they kind of want...
Well, that's interesting that you describe it as rejection.
Well, open up Will into... getting closer to Hannibal in a way. I'm not sure, because it doesn't seem like Hannibal's intrinsically intrigued by Will at this moment. From what I heard of the show, that becomes more of a apparent where...
Can I remind you of a line?
Yeah.
I just want to remind you of the line that comes before Will and Hannibal discuss the copycat murder when they're having breakfast together in the first episode. You said that he doesn't have that kind of rapport with him yet, but what does Will say to Hannibal, which is, I don't find you that interesting. And Hannibal's response is, you will.
Yeah!
Oh. Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm lying.
Mm-hmm. And then isn't he like saying something about like, eat your eggs or something, or eat your breakfast.
Eat your breakfast is the line.
That command there just that command made me melt. I was like,
yeah, I would just like to point out, I described Hannibal as a rom-com, and Melissa did not agree with me. Shira, do you agree with me that the breakfast scene is like a rom-com?
The breakfast scene is an absolute rom-com.
That bit there. In general, maybe not, but...
Damn.
Or maybe in a long, long, far-fetched way, sure. That breakfast scene absolutely comes up unannounced and is like...
He arrives at his motel and has brought him breakfast, yeah.
Yeah.
Sausage.
Intestine sausages.
Bring some sausage in bed. Chunks.
The way he commands him.
Me and my girlfriend were like, oh no, Bill, don't eat it, darling. Just don't. Pack up and go.
The way Hannibal commands him as well, just like, okay, I will sit down. I will also sit down. It was almost like...
If you see an awkward, clearly broken little man, wouldn't you want to tell him to eat, like, sit down and eat something?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the way he says it. Like, okay, yeah, I'm sitting down and having breakfast now.
we'll all listen to Dr. Lecter. How could you not?
Yeah, absolutely.
That entire conversation is one of my favourites in the whole show. That and their very first conversation are two of my favourites because they're full of wonderful lines. I mentioned to Melissa one of my favourite lines is when Will asks, how do you see me? Or more specifically, first Hannibal says that Uncle Jack sees you like a delicate little teacup. and will, which is such a weird description to someone you barely know. It's just like, I think this guy's a wizardy cup. But he's saying that, you know, like, he's useful, but he's delicate, which is why they've got Hannibal in the first place. I think it is an accurate description of Will, or how Jack sees Will. And then Will says, how do you see me? And Hannibal responds, as the mongoose I want under the house when the snakes slither by. And
wild.
If someone described me that way, I would ask them to marry me immediately.
And I would ask them to repeat themselves.
I appreciate that I am strange. Interesting thoughts about the copycat murder. Obviously, I'm not going to tell you fucking anything, because it's more fun that way. But I love theorizing. I love hearing your theories. That's exactly what I hope.
It's all a ruse, I tell ya. It's all fake.
But why? Actually, yeah, that's a good point. We didn't answer that. We kind of like thought, okay, so maybe he has some kind of rapport with him. He says he will find him interesting. Why?
I think there was a weird, eerie thing about the way that when they went to the construction site thing, and then Hannibal just very eerily creepy and obviously sexy picked up the phone and was like, hello, they know.
Yeah, why does Hannibal warn Garrett Jacob Hobbs?
Because, fuck knows, but I feel like that's why there's something dodgy about the copycat thing. I feel like that was done on purpose, either by Hannibal or by someone else. Oh my god, maybe Hannibal is like a ringlord, right? And he's got a big load of dudes, or just people in general, under him, and he's got his little minions, or they're just like all his bitches. And he wants Will as one of his bitches, but he can't crack into him. So he's trying to do the shit to impress him, or I don't know, or get him wild up so that he can interject. Maybe he's just recruiting.
I mean, a cannibal network does sound very plausible. That's exactly what I thought when they called.
In fairness, we do know there are two cannibals in the first episode, purely because we know Hannibal Lecter is a cannibal. The show doesn't tell us that, but we know it. And they know that everyone knows it.
Well, there could be three cannibals now, because you can never know if the copycat is Hannibal.
Yeah?
Even though it feels like it. I'm still holding on to the fact that the copycat is just someone who enjoyed the murders of the previous murderer and is just becoming obsessed and wants to recreate it. Because you hear that a lot in murder.
That's how we get the term copycat murder, is being influenced by existing ones.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Shira, why do you think that Hannibal warns Garrett Jacob Hobbs on the phone?
Oh, I don't know. Like I said, I'm a potential network of cannibals, really. Actually, that wasn't my thought. That wasn't my thought. My initial thought before kind of like getting into this chat was he was trying to set up a moment where he can make Will see that he's not, show Will that he's more empathetic, than so kind of like throughout seeing that scenario, because what happens after that scenario is Hannibal coming in and keeping the person with the daughter's neck from bleeding anymore, and then going to the hospital and kind of like showing himself to be this empathetic person, maybe almost to kind of draw Will in more, to kind of show Will like I'm not the lion that you think I am.
I have sensitive side.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you think he set it up knowing that it would probably result in a confrontation, because why wouldn't it? So that way Hannibal gets shown as a saviour character.
As a saviour character, where we're drawing Will in a bit more, in more terms of like, oh, yeah, you can trust me, because as I noted earlier, I don't feel like Will completely trusts, or almost rejected Hannibal, and Hannibal just doesn't like rejections. Like, no, but I'm going to make you in this, not in a long roundabout way, to go, to accept me.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to go into the three things that we're going to do every episode, which is, I have asked both of you to every episode make a note of your favourite quote from the episode, your favourite single moment, and then your next episode predictions. And I'm quite happy about my favourite moment, because it's very relevant to what we were just discussing. But so let's go, Melissa, first. What is your favourite quote
Oh, my favorite quote, I think, is in the beginning, the one that he says about the autism spectrum thing. Can't remember the exact quote.
Yeah, hitching to the post one.
That's it, yeah. I just thought that was quite funny, and the way that he delivered it, it was quite flustered as well, and it was almost just like emphasizing what he was saying. It was very sweet.
My horse is hitched to a post closer to Asperger's and autistics than narcissists and sociopaths.
Yeah, exactly. It was almost just like the way he was like trying to like say it, and it was just a little bit like flustered at the same time. It was just like, it's okay, baby boy. And then my favorite moment, eat your breakfast.
Eat your breakfast.
My ovaries quivered. And my predictions for next episode, more close proximities, gay sex, and that's all I can think of at the moment. Yeah, I think there might be a recurring theme of my next episode predictions. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay. I think that's going to be a recurring theme for all of us.
Yeah.
What we all want is what we're all here for.
Shira, what are yours?
So my favourite quote is kind of like something that we touched upon earlier, which was, eyes are distracting. You see too much, you don't see enough. I really like that because it is like, yeah, me. Because like, it's the reason why I do not like making eye contact. It's like, oh God, you're distracting me. What I can see through your eyes, and you just think, I'm trying to read you, I'm like seeing every speck, every shine in your eye, every speck of dirt on your face, every kind of like bump or like thing that just, it's weirdly because I see that detail and I'm like, oh God, that is 100% me. And I think the full quote goes, and it's hard to focus when you're thinking, oh, there's white, it's really white, etc. I'm like, yeah, that's exactly how I, when I'm looking at.
You've got to learn to say it like Will does now. You see too much, you don't see enough.
Yeah, you see too much, you don't see enough. And it's hard to focus when you're thinking, oh, those whites are really white. Oh, he must have hepatitis. But yeah, etc. Yeah, I love that quote. One, because it's a very good way of kind of like explaining why people you don't like making eye contact. And like, yeah, I think that is definitely a like autistic trait, even though it's like, oh, it has to be an innate thing. You like can't make eye contact. You can't just decide not to make eye contact. No, 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 no. I have two favorite scenes. Obviously, I'm just going to quickly mention. I'm going to mention the doggy scene because I love dogs.
Oh, we didn't talk about Will and his dogs. Okay, I have to tell you a thing.
Oh my God! Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'll give you a bonus thing. In the script, he has 8 dogs. He actually. He only has, I think it's 6 in one shot and then 7 in the other in total in the thing. But yeah, in the script, he's meant to have 8 fucking dogs. That's not even including Winston, so that makes 9, I think. Yes. Let's just all, Will is lovely and takes in strays. Now carry on.
Yeah.
He's such a good boy.
Oh my God, such a good boy. And yeah, can I mention golden retriever person then for him? But yeah, that was, I wanted to mention that as like a honourable mention. I love doggies. I love puppies, and I love him with seeing him wash the stray dog. And it was really adorable. And taking him in, smash. But I will say my favourite scene is where Jack goes to meet Hannibal in his office, and the specific part of it where Hannibal thinks Jack is investigating him. Mm-hmm. And you can see, and this is why I said there's two sides to everything, where you see this very personable man talking to Jack, Hannibal, very knowledgeable, and then as soon as it kind of dawns to him that like he could be a potential suspect in the crime, the way his face just slightly changes just sent shivers down my back. And I was like, this is my favorite scene. This is an amazing scene with Mads Mikkelsen and Lawrence Fishburne. I was just like, absolutely in love with that scene. But then it just like turns out, oh, everything's fine. But yeah, you could just like, it like switches from one thing. And it's obviously, I can mention how the cinematography was really good in, in that part, and the music was really good in that part as well. But yeah, the acting was just like on point.
Would you like another piece of information?
Oh, absolutely.
No way.
So it doesn't happen the same way in the show, but he mentions in the show, Hannibal mentions that he soon learned that you cut a pencil, or you sharpen a pencil more easily with a scalpel than a sharpener.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is a reference to his past life in another role. Yes. And in the script, again, it doesn't quite happen the same way. It's a bit more chill, but like you mentioned, you see his thinking process in his face. And yeah. In the script, it actually says, Hannibal sits down the pencil, but not the scalpel. He listens to Jack, eyes drifting to the FBI agent's jugular.
Oh my god, I'm so glad I caught that.
you read man's face very well.
Well, yeah, no, that's exactly why I loved that scene. And then suddenly that scene turned all heads. Oh, no, you're not. I'm not investigating you. I just need your help. Like, and it happened and happy again and they're friends again. And that was such a good scene. It sent shivers down my back, but it also made me go, damn, I really want Hannibal in my bed right now. Anyway. Predictions for the next episode. Obviously, I'm going to mention again, they all bone, but you know.
All of them.
All of them will bone. but no. I think for next prediction is. I had a prediction at the start of this episode where, like, we'll start finding out more about the copycat killer and things like that. But now I feel like the viewers will find out it's Hannibal, but obviously the FBI wouldn't find out or anything like either that, and it will just keep it will push Will into Hannibal's arms, considering that he can't figure out who the killer copycat killer is, and it's driving him mad. That's my prediction for next episode.
Interesting.
Catch me, Daddy, in your warm embracing killer arms.
Oh, he's got such beautiful broad shoulders. I wouldn't want to be held in those arms. Probably unsurprisingly, my favourite quote is one of the more ridiculous purple prosy ones. I had a lot of quotes I was tempted to choose, but this one is one I love listening to him say it, and shockingly it's not a Will quote. My favourite quote is one of the things that Hannibal says to Will during their first meeting when he's psychoanalyzing him, which is, I imagine what you see and learn touches everything else in your mind. Your values and decency are present, yet shocked at your associations, appalled at your dreams. No thoughts in the bone arena of your skull for things you love.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that was a good scene.
Bone arena of your skull is one of my favourite things I've ever heard.
That is... brilliant.
Oh, I have a thing for that as well. I have more notes I've made. Where's my notes? No, bone, yes. Not boner. I just accidentally searched boner in my notes.
I was going to say, I don't know. That's probably just a reflection of me and my mind on anything else.
Bonus. In the script, after that quote, it says, Hannibal has just described Will Graham to a letter, but he is not about to give him the satisfaction of knowing it. So that's why Will is so pissed off, because he knows that Hannibal is reading him to perfection, and that's why he's so angry.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's why he's so bitter, and why he doesn't get along with Hannibal to begin with.
And why he rejects him.
Yeah. I love that you've used the term rejection. I think that's a very interesting way of describing it. My personal favourite moment, other than literally the entire episode from beginning to end, is at the end when Will has shot Garrett Jacob Hobbs and Abigail, his daughter, is bleeding on the ground. Will is panicking and he has his hand to her throat and he's trying to stop the bleeding. And Hannibal is standing in the doorway and he just watches. There is a prolonged period of time before he steps in, and he slightly tilts his head, and he's just watching Will and seeing what he does. Oof. Then he steps in. And that is my single favourite moment, is Hannibal analysing Will, almost like he's not a person, before he steps in. Fucking surgeon knows exactly what he's doing and how to stem a bleed, and then does it. And also, that moment is not in the script.
Really?
Yeah, so the whole scene is in the script, but Hannibal standing to watch before he acts is not in the script.
Also, Mads Mikkelsen could have made it himself. God, bad.
Yeah.
Good acting.
Very good acting.
Oh my God, this man, what can he not do?
My prediction for the next episode, which obviously I know nothing about and I've never seen, is that Hannibal will teach Jack Crawford how to waltz.
Oh, where did you get that from? That's crazy.
I just have this inkling, this feeling that it's going to happen.
Oh wow!
It might even be like a whole song and dance number.
Can I buy a lottery ticket from you?
we'll see. We'll test my predictions. They are very good.
Oh my god!
Oh, fantastic.
Okay, so do either of you have anything else you want to add before we wrap up?
I am so excited for this to watch the rest of the show, but also this chatting with you guys. Shit, hoping that the boys bang.
Yeah, I had so much fun doing this.
I'm so glad. That makes me very happy. It's my little passion project that makes me very happy.
I could tell that even if it doesn't continue on for too long, and I really enjoyed doing this, and I'm looking forward to doing more. And I hope it do continue because I'm looking forward to watching the episodes. I'm looking forward to discussing with you all, and it was just such a fun, big, long discussion about something so cool. And like your prompts even helped make. Sometimes you can't tell if you can discuss something like something so small. Mm-hmm. And like that episode is quite small, considerably considering to. What other things you can watch, but like, and I didn't think that I could discuss as much as I did, but yeah, also fun.
Thank you, hyperfixation. Oh, trust me, I'll have plenty of things to get you to talk about for every episode.
Oh, exciting.
I'm very glad that through our talking and getting more comfortable with it, that I managed to lead you along the path of theorizing, because that's my favorite thing, and you're both very good at it, and I'm very glad that we're going to get more of that.
Oh, it's always a fun thing to do, isn't it? And even more so to just verbalise it literally through just speaking to people. And absolutely. Just having those extra little tidbits that we wouldn't know unless someone knows a lot and has looked them up already, or because we wouldn't necessarily know to look them up. So that is an added extra bit that me absolutely. And others love.
That reminds me, I've got another little bit of trivia for you.
Oh,
just from looking at my notes, which I will post online because I have 8 pages of where. Woo! Yeah, so for anyone listening, as well as us watching this, I am also reading the entire script for every episode and noting down all of the changes and cut.
We're serious content. Around here.
They are spoiling us.
I love stuff. There are a lot of cannibal puns in this show. The first episode would have had one, but it was cut out, which I'm very sad about. I think it fits the tone better for it not to be there. But you know, there's the shot of Hannibal preparing and then eating the lungs.
Yeah.
In the script, it actually has Hannibal commenting, "pre-smoked."
Amazing.
Amazing. Like a little cunt.
I would have loved that, especially given the sort of... vibe of it, where it was very like sinister, very like suave, and he's all posh and fancy and like almost a bit artistic as well, because you can't really see anything else, you just see him and his suit and his eating and all this stuff. It's
his
very
apron,
his apron,
and yeah, and I feel like he's like, oh, pre-smoked before he goes and eats the first bite. I would have absolutely pissed my pants.
Also reminds me, fucking, I have so many notes, and now I'm just looking at them like, all these things I can say. Just random offhand thing, a bit of dialogue that was cut, which is at one point it has, during their breakfast conversation, Hannibal says to Will, "I called your good friend Dr. Bloom about you. She wouldn't gossip, not a word. She's very protective of you. Smitten, I would say. She asked me to keep an eye on you." I'm just going to let you know that that's there. Also... when they're eating the breakfast, in the script it says he, Hannibal, is genuinely amused and successfully hides it when Will takes a bite of the protein scramble.
Oh no.
I added the note, what a little shit.
It's also with undertones of flirting. Man loves this boy. He loves him. And he's like, yeah, you eat my eggs, you dirty little boy. I'm going to have you for dinner later.
Yes, so many thoughts I have and information I had to give you later about Hannibal's thoughts about Will. I think that's everything. I think I'm just looking at my notes like, is there anything interesting I missed I could tell you? Oh, there is something I noted at the end. Actually, it was just a thing I kind of wrote for myself, which is in the script, upon seeing Hannibal next to Abigail in the hospital room at the end, in the script, Will sits beside Hannibal. He sits next to him. In the show, he sits on the opposite side of Abigail. Personally, I prefer that framing. I can't entirely tell you why, but the image of them on either side of Abigail is a little bit of foreshadowing. And I'll leave that at that.
Cliffhanger.
Cliffhanger. I think these little tidbits of information make watching them next episode a bit more excruciating, but also so much more fun.
Oh, do you know what's worse? That foreshadowing isn't going to make sense for episodes.
Tickled our pickle and then
I hate you. I hate you.
This is what I'm here for. I can tell you two little nerdy things. I'm going to leave you with one final thing, which is a teaser for the next episode, which I will give you every time we record. I will give you a teaser.
You tease. You absolute tease.
Are you ready for your teaser?
Yes, I'm ready for my pickle to be tickled.
There won't be much room for speculation in the next episode, as it deals with moral quandaries. Fate and Circumstance is an independent podcast brought to you by Felix Fanfaron Fern, Melissa Susan, and Shira Bambi. You can find and follow us on Twitter and Tumblr at HannibalPod. We are fans of the show NBC's Hannibal and do not own the rights to any of the materials discussed, merely appreciators. The music used in this podcast is Tchaikovsky's Op. No. 40 Waltz by Kevin MacLeod, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 4.0 license. Thanks for listening.